coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
It's election season, and we'll hear from the two candidates vying for the 73rd district seat in the Wisconsin State Assembly.
The unemployment system completely failed. I think the state of Wisconsin dropped the ball, and I'm just curious on what Representative Milroy did during this time.
Speaker Robin Voss is the person who ran Keith to run against me. He's playing politics with people's lives here in Superior.
Plus, our weekly roundup of regional news. And do you know who Douglas County was named for?
It was named after that individual for a reason.
Coming up next. Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Today, we continue our debate series of candidates for seats in the Wisconsin Assembly in the November 3rd election. We'll speak with the two candidates for the 73rd District, which includes most of Douglas County, including all of the city of Superior, and the northern portions of Washburn County and Burnett County. The candidates are the incumbent, Democrat Nick Milroy, who has served in the seat since 2009. A graduate of Superior High School, he enlisted in the United States Navy and was deployed to the Persian Gulf. He continued his service in the Naval Reserves while pursuing a biology degree at the University of Wisconsin-Superior. After graduation, Nick taught biology and worked as a scientist for state, federal, tribal, and private organizations. He served two terms on the Superior City Council and describes himself as the only scientist to serve in the Wisconsin State Assembly. Nick's wife, Julie, is a public school teacher, and they have three children. Welcome to Simply Superior, Nick Milroy.
Thank you, Robin.
Also with us is the challenger, Republican Keith Kern. He also grew up in Superior and graduated from Superior High School in 2003. At 20, he began managing his family's business, Jimmy's Saloon, and purchased it in 2016. He now operates it with his wife, Emily. Among his civic activities are positions with the Tavern League and the Lake Superior Ice Festival. He's also raced stock cars for 20 years. In 2016, Keith was elected to the Superior City Council and later served as council president. Welcome to Simply Superior, Keith.
Thanks for having me.
And I'm going to offer this much of an opinion. You know, we don't have an opinion on these things, but I have to say, given your birthplaces, both candidates are Superior candidates, correct?
Yes, we are.
All right. You guys agree on something here. So.
We do.
Right. One aspect also of our WPR debates is while I might ask for clarification as the moderator, we encourage you, when it's your time to speak, to challenge each other if you think the other candidate is saying something that's factually untrue. So I might do it if you say something egregiously wrong, like the sun rises in the west, but don't wait for me to do that. And again, feel free when it's your turn to correct the factual misstatement, if you will. So, our first question is basically your opinion, and we're going to start with Mr. Kern. Why do you think you're the best person to represent the 73rd District in the coming term?
Well, once again, thanks for having me on today, and welcome, Nick, as well. Sitting here for the last couple of months going through the pandemic and everything that is going on, realized that, you know, not only northern Wisconsin but the rest of the state needs a stronger voice to get through the situations that we're at. Northern Wisconsin, in my opinion, has had a lack of leadership for many years, and I feel like the resources are just lacking in our area. On City Council, I have experienced those things firsthand, and going down the Superior days and fighting for things that we need in our area, we just haven't seen those things come to fruition. It's been a great honor serving on City Council, and I'm really looking forward to trying to work harder and be a stronger voice for Northern Wisconsin. We've been on the campaign working over and over long hours, knocking on many doors, and hearing the concerns that people in our constituents have as far as their thoughts on our representation in northern Wisconsin. So I want to continue to work hard on our campaign and make sure that we are able to go into November knowing that we've hit every single door possible and talk to as many people as possible and try to understand what the true needs and concerns are. I'm sure me and Nick both can agree that we have our own ideas and where we feel Superior and our district need to go. But it's up to the constituents to tell us what we need to do. And it's our job as elected officials to make sure that we bring that message down to Madison or on our local governments to get those things done. I look forward to today's debate, and I will turn the floor over.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Kern. Mr. Milroy, 2 minutes also. Why are you the best candidate?
Well, I want to thank you also, Robin, and thank you, Keith, for agreeing to be part of this forum. This is a really great opportunity for the citizens to hear from candidates and hear different perspectives on how to move our state forward. And I'm especially proud that KUWS and the university are hosting this because they provide such a great service to our region. UWS is our most important public institution in the 73rd Assembly District, and it's a special place to me and my family. My parents grew up dirt poor in Superior, and they were given the opportunity to climb out of poverty by becoming first-generation college graduates right here at UWS. They both were educators and small business owners in our community, and I grew up wiping down the tables and sweeping the floors at Shamrock Pizza and at the Kinderhaus Kids Clothing Store. My dad worked 3 jobs to put food on the table for his 5 kids. And my parents wanted more for their 5 children than they had. And it's the same opportunities that I was given by having the opportunity to get an affordable public education. That's what my parents wanted for their kids, and it's what we all accomplished. 4 of the 5 Milroy siblings graduated from UWS. My youngest sister, Molly, she went to Texas A&M, but we won't hold that one against her. Like my father, I was able to go to college with the help of the GI Bill. I worked 2 jobs while going to college, and I graduated in less than 4 years. I didn't graduate in less than 4 years because I was overly smart. I did it more because I didn't want to pay another semester of tuition. And I owe a lot to UWS and the professors there and people that provided me with opportunities to have a foundation to be successful in life. That's one of the big reasons why I first ran for public office, because I wanted to give back to the community that has given so much to me and so much to my family. My dream for my 3 children is what my parents wanted for me, and it's what I want for everyone's kid. That's to have opportunities for the next generation to have a better life than the last. My priorities as your state representative will never waver. I'm focused on creating opportunities for good-paying jobs in our region, and I'm a fiscal watchdog that believes that our tax dollars are best spent investing in education, health care, and supporting small businesses. We need to end the corporate welfare to places like Foxconn, which I voted against, and we need to end sending our tax dollars to private voucher schools. Those dollars deserve to be in our classrooms. We also need to do more partnering with our high schools and technical college systems so that young people can get the training they need and the jobs that support our local small businesses. We're in desperate need for more affordable health care, and we have a real crisis when it comes to access to mental health care. Those are big priorities of mine. That's why I believe that we need to expand Medicare in Wisconsin. Right now, Wisconsin taxpayers are sending $1.6 billion to Washington, D.C., and we aren't getting it back because Republicans in Madison refuse time and again to expand Medicaid. I have a proven record of working with both Republicans and Democrats to deliver results for northern Wisconsin. I'm one of only a handful of veterans in the Assembly. I'm the only biologist, and I believe we need more representatives that think like scientists and less like politicians.
Thank you, Nick Milroy. So let's move on to our first question for Mr. Kern. More than 500,000 residents have sought state unemployment benefits since the pandemic began. How do you think the legislature should be helping workers during the pandemic?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, I can speak to a lot of people that may be listening today that the unemployment system completely failed the citizens of Wisconsin. I myself, being a business owner and also employing 10 employees, have struggled to help these employees get through the line that was constantly either busy or you go through the process and the prompts and go through everything just for them to hang up on you. There was funding that should have been set aside through the Federal CARES Act that I believe Governor Evers could have used to help transport some employees that may have not offices been open to educate some of those employees to be able to help with the back workload. Just seen the other day that the governor has fired his DWS secretary. And what is the reasoning for that? If the system wasn't broke and wasn't going well, why do you have to fire him? The complete frustration that I've heard from citizens while we've been on this campaign is a lack in the ability to be able to at least collect a paycheck while this pandemic and the shutdown's been going on. I think the state of Wisconsin dropped the ball, and I'm just curious on what Representative Milroy did during this time. I did call numerous times on behalf of my employees. I called on friends and families and neighbors, and even myself trying to call to get through. And it was just completely a daunting task of something that, in my opinion, needed to be taken care of first and forehand. When we decide to shut down a whole entire state without thinking a game plan all the way through, there's unintended consequences that go with that. And I just feel like that ball got dropped.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Kern. Mr. Milroy, same question. How do you think the legislature should be helping workers during the pandemic?
Well, I think first and foremost that the legislature needs to make sure that workers are protected during a global pandemic and that we are keeping people healthy. And that is not what we are seeing everywhere. It's not what we're seeing from the legislature. And on top of that, millions of people have been put out of work through no fault of their own. And it's true that the unemployment insurance system is totally broken in Wisconsin. We have tried to make investments in that system for years, but Scott Walker and the Republican Party would not update the software that has led to the problems that we see. They instituted a one-week waiting period so that people couldn't collect their unemployment for 1 week. We had to come back into special session because federal law wouldn't allow us to have that requirement in. But that was 150 days ago. The Republicans control the legislature, and they failed to fix the system that is broken. It was broken by design. Republicans don't believe in paying out unemployment insurance, and it's a real shame because people are hurting in northern Wisconsin.
Thank you. Mr. Kern, would you like to have a, say, one-minute rebuttal to that?
How is it that the biennial budget that Governor Evers put out had no ask from the Democratic side for any increase in software or any additional training and or staff? Granted, we all knew that this pandemic was not on the radar or the map, but if those asks were out in a biennial budget, how come it was never asked for or presented as a downfall with the unemployment system?
And Mr. Milroy, a rebuttal to the rebuttal, if you wish.
This is funding that it has continuously been asked for by the Department of Workforce Development that the Republicans have not granted through the legislative process, and they have not fixed the problems with the software. They refused to remove the one-week waiting period until we had to be able to capture the federal dollars. It's all part of the Republican strategy to try to keep people from ever collecting unemployment insurance in the first place.
Thank you. Mr. Kern, do you support Wisconsin's mask mandate as championed by Governor Evers?
I had no problem with the first mask mandate. It's his right to be able to put a mandate that goes on. Locally, our local government did as well. I did not support the local at that point. I believe that this mask mandate that was presented locally and throughout the state had a lot of areas that were hard for business owners and even people living in the area to understand and move forward. If you're going to hold certain businesses accountable and take their livelihoods and put them at jeopardy because they're unable to understand the way that a resolution or a mandate is written, I had a real problem with that. I think that we're all grown adults and we can make safe, wise decisions to make sure that we're living our lives to the fullest that we can while also being responsible with it. This pandemic has brought many challenges forward for everybody, and everybody's dealing with it in the best ways that they can and trying to do it in a safe, responsible way. But we need to keep remembering, you just got to wash your hands, make sure if you're sick, you stay home, and do not cough and sneeze on anybody. Those are all things I think that we can take. Now, this extension on the mandate, I believe, is unconstitutional, and I'm pretty sure that it will be taken up through the Supreme Court and challenged, but we'll see where that direction goes.
All right. Mr. Milroy, same question. Do you support Wisconsin's mask mandate as championed by Governor Evers?
I do, and I'm tired of people that politicize this issue and push false and dangerous information. There are over 200,000 people in this country that have died because of the lack of leadership from the president on down, who never properly addressed a global pandemic like nothing we have ever seen before. Number one, we need to listen to public health experts and trust science. We live in a society where too many people think that they're experts in everything, and it's important that we understand that we don't have all of the answers, but that's why there are people that do this for a living and understand the consequences. Scientists estimate that if we got rid of the mask mandate, there will be an additional 200,000 lives lost. If we continue with some more strict guidelines and mask mandates, by the end of the year, we can save 200,000 lives. I believe that government has a responsibility to protect lives, protect citizens, and I think it's the best thing for our economy. Because without having a healthy people, we can't have a healthy economy. So we have to find ways to make sure that we're keeping people healthy, that we can get through this pandemic. That's what's going to help our businesses the most.
Nick, can I ask you a question? Why, with the secondary mandate that's going out and the governor coming forward saying that he's blaming it mainly on the campuses and university areas, to move forward with an approach that's going to be a blanket-wide policy throughout the state, wouldn't it be smarter to look at this thing as a regional approach versus a blanket-wide statewide approach?
It wouldn't. I think if you listen to public health experts and you trust science, it will tell you that wearing a mask is going to slow the spread of this disease. And the more we slow the spread, the more likely we are to get it under control, the less lives will be lost, and the quicker we can get back to normal and we can get the support to businesses that we need.
Well, I also do want to say that I'm not challenging science. I do believe in science. But with what they're saying now is an increase in cases that are going on. We've been under this mask ordinance now for 60 days. Why is it still spiking?
It's a virus. Masks don't stop a virus. It slows down the virus. If we all were wearing N95 masks, it would slow it down more, but people aren't. So unfortunately, it's hard to get an entire nation to comply with things. We live in a country where people really value their freedom and they don't like to be told what to do. So I've spent a lot of time, I live in a rural area, and I spent a lot of time campaigning in the rural parts of the district because it's where I live. And in the rural areas, there's not as many people that are complying, but they're not as in close contact with as many people either, so I think they feel safer. However, if all of us were to comply to the greatest extent possible, we could slow the spread of this disease, save lives, and get our economy back on track.
Thank you very much, both of you. Moving on. Mr. Kern, following the shooting of Jacob Blake by police in Kenosha, Assembly Speaker Robin Vos created a task force to address issues related to policing and racial disparities. The Evers administration had proposed a package of 9 bills after the death of George Floyd in May. Do you think either of these plans can seriously improve the relations between police departments and the state's African-American community?
Well, I think a lot of that 9-point deal that was presented by Governor Evers is already being addressed by Mosul law enforcement. I know that I've had talks with our police chief up here, and some of the points of those bills are being addressed. It's a shame of what happened down there and the destruction that has caused and the anger and hurt that people are doing, but I cannot get on board with the fact that the rioting and protesting and burning down of things. Now, we have to have law enforcement to be able to take care of issues that we have, that we have a judicial system that is going to address any of the issues that are going on, especially if there's, things that are happening with officers. I know in Superior alone, we're looking at hiring social workers and increased training and allowing for officers to understand and train themselves better and make sure that they're more equipped to handle situations that they might face on the street. I think it's a plan that we all need to continue to work on, and I like to see that we're making steps for it. But if we're alluding to defunding police or allowing for this type of activity to happen, I just cannot go along with that.
Okay. Mr. Milroy, following the shooting of Jacob Blake by police in Kenosha, Assembly Speaker Robin Vos created a task force to address issues related to policing and racial disparities. The Evers administration had proposed a package of 9 bills after the death of George Floyd in May. Do you think either of these plans can seriously improve the relations between police departments and the state's African-American community?
Well, I think they both have the possibility to do that. I think it's important that the governor work with the legislature, no matter which party is in charge, to take into account the issues that they bring to the table with respect to issues like this. But more importantly, I think it's important that we have elected officials that recognize that we have a racial disparity issue in this country. If we want our state to thrive, all communities must feel safe and have opportunities to be successful. And that's not happening right now. But it's not only racial disparities. We see that even here in northern Wisconsin, where we've been left behind by the Republicans and the politicians down in Madison and Milwaukee when it comes to health care and education and corrections and mental health care access. These are the same issues that we're seeing in the inner city, that we see in rural areas, and all the whole spectrum of it needs to be addressed to try to deal with these issues. I'm also appalled at the rioting and looting that took place down in Kenosha. Destroying other people's property is never okay. And those who are intent on destroying other people's property should be arrested and charged to the fullest extent of the law.
All right. Moving it closer to home, but also on race relations. Would you support adding an S to Douglas County to rename it for Frederick Douglass rather than Stephen A. Douglass, for which it is named? Why or why not, Mr. Kern?
To me, I don't think it really much matters. I mean, if we're trying to erase history or change names on things, it was named after that individual for a reason, and that's what I believe in.
All right. Mr. Milroy?
Well, that is an interesting proposal. Obviously, Frederick Douglass is a very important figure in our nation's history. He was one of the leaders that led the abolitionist movement, and I think we need to honor people like that in our country. I don't know that we necessarily need to change the name of counties, but we really need to look for examples of leaders that were ahead of their time, and Frederick Douglass is one of those people.
Okay. You're listening to a special edition of Simply Superior, featuring a debate between the two candidates for the Wisconsin State Assembly seat for the 73rd District. It includes most of Douglas County, including all of the city of Superior, and the northern portions of Washburn County and Burnett County. The candidates are incumbent Nick Milroy, a Democrat from Superior, and his challenger Keith Kern, a Republican also from Superior. I'm Robin Washington. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and our fall member drive continues at WPR. You rely on us for local election news like today's debate, as well as our music, breaking news, and conversation. Your contributions make it all possible. To make one, give us a call at 888-202-2552 or donate online at WPR.org. And we're continuing with our debate of the two candidates to represent the 73rd District in the Wisconsin State Assembly. They are Nick Milroy, the incumbent Democrat from Superior, welcome back, Nick, and his challenger, Keith Kern, a Republican also from Superior. Welcome back, Keith.
Thank you.
So let's resume, and this time Mr. Milroy will go first. Mr. Milroy, Wisconsin regulators have signed off on a proposed $700 million natural gas plant put forth by Minnesota Power and Dairyland Power Cooperative. The utility providers have said that the project will help bridge the transition away from coal to renewable energy sources. Environmental groups have filed a lawsuit against regulators for approving it. Do you support the project?
Absolutely. I have been working very closely with Dairyland Power and Minnesota Power to bring the largest private investment in history to the 73rd Assembly District. This will be a tremendous boon to our economy, and it also supports the transition to our green energy economy, where we know the future of energy is going. So this is a wonderful project for our district, and I'm very pleased to be able to work with Dairyland Power and Minnesota Power to bring this to the citizens of the 73rd Assembly District.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Kern, it's a long question, so I will repeat it. Wisconsin regulators have signed off on a proposed $700 million natural gas plant put forth by Minnesota Power and Dairyland Power Cooperative. The utility providers have said that the project will help bridge the transition away from coal to renewable energy sources. Environmental groups have filed a lawsuit against regulators for approving it. Do you support the project?
Absolutely, I support it 100%. As Nick alluded to, it would be one of the largest projects that has, or the largest project that has ever been built in northern Wisconsin. I think it's a great partnership with Dairyland Energy and the other energy companies that are involved with it. It does also help an opportunity for better paying jobs within our area, and not to mention it can also help the local economy as far as the export tax that will come off of the energy that is being produced from the facility. So it's a win-win all the way around, and I really look forward to it coming to fruition.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Kern. Mr. Milroy, you co-sponsored a bill that would allow for someone with a concealed carry license to possess a firearm in a place of worship. What motivated you to sign on to it? And what did you hope the intended result would be?
I think that gun rights are a very important part of our American heritage. It's spelt right into the U.S. Constitution, and I just don't believe that the government has a right to infringe on somebody's right to carry a firearm.
Okay. Mr. Kern, what do you think of allowing concealed carry in places of worship?
I agree with it. I believe that every person has a right to protect themselves, and we've seen a lot of instances where there's been shootings that have happened in churches and other areas. I think it's a great bill. Thank you, Nick, for co-sponsoring that or writing that bill. It just shows the fact that if a church doesn't want to have that ability, just like a private business doesn't want to, or some industries that aren't allowed to, that they can still post that sign, but it doesn't allow people to have the opportunity to protect themselves.
Thank you, Mr. Kern. Mr. Milroy, on the aforementioned bill, you were in fact the only Democrat to co-sponsor it, and despite the Republican majority and your support, it still didn't pass. Another bill you co-sponsored saw the reverse scenario, 22 Democratic co-sponsors and 2 Republicans. It sought official sanction to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the creation of the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore, and that one failed too. You showed in your support of the concealed carry bill a willingness to cross party lines. What should you have done to bring Republicans along on a far less controversial measure, such as celebrating the Apostle Islands?
Well, what should I have done? So I don't focus a lot of time and energy on issues like that that are outside of my district, and I don't feel are necessarily as important as some of the other work that I try to accomplish in the Wisconsin legislature. I have a proven track record of working across the aisles to get things done for northern Wisconsin, and I'm always fighting to try to bring better paying jobs to my district, to get our fair share from Madison, and to make sure that the next generation has better opportunities than the last.
Thank you. Mr. Kern, again, a slightly different version since you weren't in office. First, can you see yourself being the lone Republican co-sponsor on a bill with 20 Democrats? And secondly, would you have supported celebrating the 50th anniversary of the creation of the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore?
Absolutely. I think it's our job to work, to be bipartisan, to find the solutions, not for our party, but for our constituents that are around. You know, if we want to put party titles on our positions, which we have to, I understand that, but that is not my job to work at the party. My job is to work for constituents. We got Republicans in the southern part of the state that probably do not understand what it's like to live in rural northern Wisconsin. And so anything that makes sense and things that we've been doing on this campaign are common sense approach to government and things that we need to do to work together to make sure that we're making those decisions, that we're living within our means, treating government as not a cash cow that we can just keep taxing people with. But we got to make decisions that are smart and at the end of the day work for the citizens that we work for that pay us and not for the parties.
Okay. Any rebuttal, Mr. Milroy?
Nope.
All right. Mr. Milroy, you also co-sponsored a bill seeking to designate a local exposition district by the City of Superior Despite strong Republican support locally, it failed in Madison. What do you need to do to convince your Republican colleagues in the Assembly?
Well, I have worked very hard on the Better Cities initiative over the last couple of years, as have dozens of community leaders and community members that have worked on this. I've worked with Republicans and Democrats, and I'm proud of my record moving this proposal forward. I've been able to get broad bipartisan support, and I have a huge list of co-sponsors, both Republicans and Democrats, for this legislation. Last session, the Republican chairman of the Ways and Means Committee gave me a hearing on this bill, and even though he had three members that were not willing to vote for it, I spoke to him and the other members of the committee after the hearing, and he agreed to let it go through with a vote because we had enough votes with Republicans and Democrats. That is something that does not ever happen in the legislature. And unfortunately, the only thing that's holding back this legislation is Speaker Robin Voss. This is the person that's responsible for recruiting Republicans to run for the Assembly. He's playing politics with people's lives in Superior, and it's exactly what people hate about politics. As long as I continue to serve the people, I will continue to fight for our fair share, and I'm willing to work with anyone to get it done, regardless of party.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Milroy. Mr. Kern, you're one of those Superior businesses it is intended to help. Are you in favor of the Exposition District? And if so, what would you do to make sure it passes?
Absolutely, I'm in support of the Expo District. It's something that I've been working with City Council on, bringing down the Spear Days for many, many years. As the president of the Tavern League, this Expo District would actually impose a tax on prepared food and beverage, which would affect our industry. It's something that we supported as an association. It's also something that went out on a binding referendum that I believe passed 75% over 6 years ago, or non-binding, I'm sorry, over 6 years ago. I'm just curious as why it hasn't been able to get done and what's holding it up. I'll wait for my rebuttal time after Representative Milroy.
Representative, do you have a rebuttal to that?
I already said what's holding it up. Speaker Robin Voss is holding it up. It's the person who ran Keith to run against me. He's the Speaker of the Assembly. If he wanted this bill to pass, I got it out of committee last time. Robin Voss would not bring it up for a vote. He's playing politics with people's lives here in Superior, and it's exactly what people hate about politics. They want us to work together, and unfortunately, that's not the way it works with Speaker Robin Voss.
Okay. Mr. Kern, rebuttal?
Nick, when we went down the Superior Days, wasn't there a scheduled hearing that was supposed to take place, and was there a handwritten last-minute email sent over and or fax to try to schedule that hearing that was not scheduled?
Say that again?
I said, when we were down for Superior Days, I believe it was last year or the year before when this thing was on the doorstep of getting passed, was there not a meeting that was supposed to be scheduled to make sure that this hearing would take place and the people coming down from Superior could let their voice be heard and the ball was dropped? There was an email that wasn't even sent over on handwritten asking for a last-minute schedulation.
I think you're mistaken. I think you're talking about a committee hearing on the proposal, which the Republicans had to cancel the committee hearing, but then they rescheduled it. So we had the committee hearing. We had the vote. It passed out of committee with bipartisan support, even though three Republicans voted against it in committee. That usually a committee chairman is not going to move something forward that three of their party members on the committee don't support, but because he believed in it and I worked with him and we all worked together, that's what got it out of committee.
So it got out of committee, but it's been floating in air for how long now?
Well, that was actually part of the question, that it indeed has not passed yet. So I think we can move on from here. However, this is the part where we give you the opportunity to directly question each other. So, Mr. Milroy, what would you like to ask your challenger?
What would I like to ask my challenger? I don't know that I really have a question to ask my challenger. Keith is somebody who's been a friend of mine since he was 18 years old. He's a great guy. I helped him when he first ran for city council. I've been close to his family for many years, and I think he's a great person. I wish him the best of luck, And I believe very strongly that the voters are the people who decide elections, and I'm going to fight for every single vote.
All right. Mr. Curran, what would you like to ask Representative Milroy?
Nick, thanks for the kind words. I do appreciate it. I do have one question, though, because you have talked a lot about bipartisan support and finding solutions. If that means breaking ties with a party and crossing the aisle. So when Governor Evers vetoed a $15 million public-private partnership to build a mental health beds in Chippewa Falls, saving millions of dollars for our local law enforcement budgets in transportation and 10-plus hours of round trip, why did you go lockstep with him and veto that?
So that's a talking point you're reading from somebody down in Madison, Keith. And the fact of the matter is that bill was rushed through the process. It was put into the budget by a Republican senator from Chippewa Falls who directed, I believe it was $15 million to go to one hospital, and there was no strings attached to that money. So we brought up an issue that, you know, the hospital could get this $15 million, taxpayer dollars, open up a mental health crisis ward, operate it for a couple of months, and then close it down and use that ward for something more profitable. So instead of letting an earmark like that go through the budget where we don't have any recourse if something bad happened, after the budget session, we worked with that Republican senator. We got the bill passed. We got the safeguards in there to protect taxpayers, and we got it done. And that's what working together is all about.
Any rebuttal to that, Mr. Kern?
I just think that the frustration for mental health within our area and the 10-hour round trip and the budget that these local law enforcement are going to have to deal with are a little hard to deal with, and it's things that we need to figure out for northern Wisconsin.
And I'm proud to say we have figured it out, and that hospital is being built in the Chippewa Falls area, the wing of that hospital.
Thank you both. So finally, your closing statements. We open with Mr. Kern, and so we'll start now with Mr. Milroy. Nick?
Well, thank you again, Robin. It was great being able to talk to you and the citizens of northwestern Wisconsin and to be able to talk with my friend Keith. I just want to mention a little bit about myself in my closing statement that I might not have gotten to. I'm in this position because I have a beautiful and wonderful supportive wife. I married my high school sweetheart. We live on a gravel road out in the country, and we're raising three beautiful children. Like many people, we work hard to provide a better future for our kids, and we've struggled with child care and health care and paying taxes. That's why I want to be a fiscal watchdog. That's why I've been a fiscal watchdog for taxpayer dollars. I voted against the Foxconn corporate tax giveaway. I voted against the Milwaukee Bucks Arena tax giveaway, even though it was supported by Democrats and Republicans. And I was one of only two Democrats to vote for a tax refund just this last session that the Republicans proposed. I'm bipartisan. I'm a problem solver that listens to all sides. I've always worked across the aisle, and I deliver results for northern Wisconsin. I'm running to give back to a community that is giving me so much. I served our country in the military, and I've been an active community volunteer my entire adult life. I volunteer hundreds of hours every year to provide kids with opportunities. I serve my hometown on the Superior City Council, and I'm honored to serve our region in the Wisconsin State Assembly. I humbly ask for your support and your vote for Milroy for Assembly. Please check out nickmilroy.com for more information about my plans to make northern Wisconsin a great place to live, work, and raise a family. I hope to earn your vote. Thank you again.
Thank you, Mr. Milroy. Keith Kern, your closing statement.
Yeah, thanks again for having us on today, Robin. Nick, it was a pleasure talking with you as well and being able to debate. Sometimes these virtual and over-the-phone things don't go as well as planned, but I think we did a good job. This campaign has been a great success so far. I've enjoyed every single minute of it. We've been out meeting people, knocking on doors from one end of the district to the other. We're going to continue to work hard to make sure that we reach every single citizen that is in the 73rd district. My time sitting on city council has taught me a lot and what our area needs, and my time on the campaign has introduced me to a lot of other problems that northern Wisconsin needs. I feel that I can be a stronger voice for northern Wisconsin. I can be the guy that goes down to Madison and gets the job done. Currently, right now, on top of a campaign, running a business, city council, tavern league, and building a house, trying to enjoy the first year of marriage with my wonderful wife, Emily. I look forward to continuing this journey along. And if elected in November and have the support from the constituents in the 73rd District, I will be the hardest working representative that Madison has ever seen.
And that concludes this debate of the two candidates to represent the 73rd District in the Wisconsin State Assembly. We'd like to thank the incumbent, Democrat Nick Milroy of Superior. Thank you, Nick.
Thank you, Robin.
And the challenger, Republican Keith Kern, also of Superior. Thank you, Keith.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And we'll be back after this. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and once again, it's member drive time at WPR. You rely on us for local election news like today's program, as well as our music, breaking news, and conversation. Your contributions make it all possible. To make one, give us a call at 888-202-2552 or donate online at WPR.org. And we continue now with this week's roundup of the regional news. I'm joined by Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Hello, Brooks.
Hi, Robin.
And our own Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio, Danielle Kading. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
So, Brooks, do I understand that COVID testing is getting easier, at least on the Minnesota side?
It is. The Minnesota State Department of Health opened its first saliva testing site in Duluth at the Deck. This week. It is free. It's open to anyone who wants a test. You can go online to make an appointment, or you can just show up, honestly. The hours are pretty broad, afternoons and evenings and during the weekends. And all you need to do is spit in a cup, and they will process your results. I'm getting my first test on Friday, today.
Well, that sounds easy enough. When do you get the results back?
Yeah, typically they're provided by email within 48 hours of arriving at the lab for processing. So a couple days.
All right. Well, saliva and chewing gum is not allowed in schools, but schools have had some changes in Ashland and Drummond, I understand. Danny?
Yeah, just on Thursday, they both went to online or virtual learning because of confirmed cases of COVID-19. In Ashland schools and in the Drummond School District. I believe in Drummond it was a couple of cases. Basically, this means that, you know, all classes will be moved online for the next couple of weeks, and then they'll reassess whether or not to do in-person instruction again.
And then there's some other closures happening in the same area?
Yeah, just this week, Ashland County issued an order to temporarily close bars and taverns after the county saw 32 new cases of the virus in the last week. And county health officials say that the increase is related to people who are spontaneously getting together in at least 7 bars in the area. And so this would affect the city of Ashland and any bar within 2.5 miles. And the order takes effect today, and it remains in effect until essentially midnight on Monday, October 12th. And it could be punishable by fine if people violate the order. They could face a $200 to $500 fine.
And then again nearby at Red Cliff, there's another order happening.
Yeah, I mean, this month, you know, all of these restrictions kind of come on the heels of new cases or rising cases in the area. You know, earlier this month, the Red Cliff ban passed its own stay-at-home order or resolution after a wedding in Washburn resulted in an outbreak of cases in the area. And the Bad River Tribe also issued a stay-at-home order to try and control the spread of the virus. I believe Bad River had 8 cases as of Wednesday, and I'm pretty sure Red Cliff had 22 as of the same day. And I know some people will say that's not a whole lot, but there are racial and health disparities with the virus, and some of that has to do with socioeconomic factors or multi-generational families living in one home. And then, you know, these areas are very rural with small populations to begin with, and the majority of which are older. So that means that people living there are more likely to experience complications if they contract the virus. So All these restrictions are being put in place to try and control the spread.
Well, that should wrap up our COVID report, at least for now. But there's some more enlightening news, I hope, happening in the region, too.
Yeah, on Saturday, the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore is marking its 50th anniversary. You know, United States Senator Gaylord Nelson, a well-known name in Wisconsin, sponsored the federal legislation that established the lakeshore on September 26th in 1970. And the lakeshore encompasses almost all of the islands. Madeline Island is not part of the lakeshore, but it was preserved and protected for everyone to use since that time. And, you know, it's got a very varied history. The islands, and Madeline Island in particular, is the site of the migration story for the Anishinaabe people and the Red Cliff Bands of Lake Superior and Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. But all bands in the area are really kind of tied to the islands, according to a Red Cliff tribal elder I spoke with, Rob Goslin. And, you know, also it was the site of some settlements back in the day. There was a small village until the end of almost World War II. So it's got a really rich and varied history, and they're kicking off a year of celebration on Saturday. They were planning to do it up until its anniversary, but as you know, COVID kind of intervened and had its own way, and so they're hoping that they can still celebrate the islands in the next coming year.
Right, and the entity celebrating it is not necessarily the state. We discussed that in the debate that we just held, and although there was a vote on it, it did not pass the legislature. So who's actually hosting it?
The National Park Service is celebrating the islands and marking its anniversary.
All right. Well, also speaking of Lake Superior institutions, the New Scenic Cafe is expanding its operation. Brooks?
Yeah, so New Scenic Cafe opened a food truck and an old Airstream trailer this summer, parked at the grounds of the restaurants on Scenic 61, which happens to be the name, of course, of the food truck itself. It brings the same sort of casual take on fine dining folks can have come to expect over 21 years now at this restaurant. It closed in March, and they spent that time trying to figure out, you know, what they're going to do amid the pandemic, you know, especially now as more and more people are coming up the North Shore this summer. And make sure you watch for some detours, as there's still some road construction going on.
All right. Well, that sounds delicious. And if you continue on that road, you'll get to the Boundary Waters, where it has got a new designation, I understand.
It is the 13th in the world to be a dark sky sanctuary. And that's a title given to land that has, quote, an exceptional or distinguished quality of starry nights and nocturnal environment that is protected for its scientific, natural, or educational value, its cultural heritage, and or public enjoyment. Long definition. But long story short, it is a place where folks can go out and enjoy the night sky without interference from city lights, from cars, from all the light pollution that impacts so many people. This designation doesn't change policy, but it does sort of highlight the fact that the policies that exist that have created this wilderness have created this dark sky sanctuary.
All right. We actually held most of a show about that subject. So if you look into our archives at www.wpr.org and search for Simply Superior and search for Dark Sky, you'll find a longer conversation about that. And you can read all the stories by Brooks and the Star Tribune's entire Twin Ports Bureau at www.startribune.com/northreport. And be sure to subscribe to their local newsletter. Thank you, Brooks.
Thanks so much, Robin.
And we've also been joined by my colleague, Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for WPR News. Thank you, Danny.
Thank you, Robin.
Next week on Simply Superior, we'll continue our debate series with candidates for the 75th State Assembly District, which is being vacated by Republican Romaine Quinn. They are Democrat John Ellenson and Republican David Armstrong. The moderator is my WPR colleague, Dean Kallenbach. I'll be back in 2 weeks moderating another for the 74th District contest between Democratic incumbent Beth Myers and her Republican challenger, James Bolin. And a final thought about today's debate. Did I sneak in a trick question, and was it more of a history pop quiz than a test of public policy? Well, a little of each. The question was if either candidate supported adding an S to the spelling of Douglas to rename Douglas County for Frederick Douglas, who spelled it with two S's, rather than Stephen A. Douglas, for whom it was named, and who spelled it with one. Both candidates seemed surprised by the question, and I doubt they heard it before. But it has been an issue elsewhere in the country, such as in Chicago, where Douglas Park was recently renamed for Frederick, and Springfield, Illinois, which is considering the same thing. If the candidates were caught off guard, neither volunteered deep knowledge of Stephen A. Douglas. And I didn't help because I gave no hints about who either Douglas was. Challenger Keith Kern said only, and I quote, "If we're trying to erase history or change names on things, it was named after that individual for a reason, and that's what I believe in," close quote. He offered no further information about that individual. Incumbent Nick Milroy did better, expressing admiration for Frederick Douglass as a great abolitionist and one who would be worthy of honoring, but he said nothing about Stephen A. Douglas either. So who was Stephen A. Douglas? Well, as I learned in the civics classrooms of my baby boomer generation, he was one half of the Lincoln-Douglas debates who beat Abe Lincoln for an Illinois U.S. Senate seat in 1856, and who faced him again in the presidential election of 1860. In that contest, the anti-slavery Lincoln beat the pro-slavery Douglas and two other candidates, sparking the Civil War, but ultimately saving the Union and ending slavery. My question could have been a gimme for Kern, who could have embraced the anti-slavery republicanism of Lincoln over Stephen Douglas's pro-slavery Democratic Party. For his part, Milroy got it half right with his knowledge of Frederick Douglass. But before they copy my homework, they might check with a real history professor like Joel Cypress at the University of Wisconsin-Superior. He broke into laughter before I could even finish describing their debate answers and told me something I didn't know, that Douglas County was actually spelled with two S's in its early days, which he's seen on maps. Historical papers from the Federal Works Progress Administration in the 1930s support that, attributing it to a misspelling when the county was founded in 1854, corrected a decade later. So why does all this matter? More important than a name, we're on the eve of what's likely one of the most consequential presidential elections in American history. What was the most consequential? That would have been 1860, lost by the Douglas on the wrong side of history, a lesson every American should know. I'm Robin Washington. Stay safe, everyone.